Well, whether it's coffee, chocolate, or vodka, you can spend a little for Maxwell House, Hershey's, or Smirnoff, or you can spend a whole lot more for Starbucks, Godiva, or Ketel One. Using vodka as a model, a recent article in Strategy and Business magazine explored the creation and maintenance of super premium brands. One of the lessons is not to advertise too much. If you're a vodka drinker, call and tell us what brand you buy and why. We'd also welcome questions about how companies create demand for ultra-high-end products. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, TOTN at NPR.org. Joining us now is one of the co-authors of that article, Leslie Moeller, leader of North American Consumer Products Practice at Booz Allen Hamilton in Cleveland, Ohio, where he's digging out from under lots and lots of snow. Glad we could give you a break from your driveway.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
Give us an idea. You used vodka as a model. When were super premiums brands first introduced? Not that long ago.
Well, I think that sort of depends on how you look at it. Absolute started, you know, before 1987, but then you have Ketel One in 97 and Grey Goose and Sky about a year or two later.
Mm-hmm.
So say the last 5 or 6 years, there's been a real growth of those products.
And how much market share have they managed to get?
On a value basis, they're over 30% of the market now.
So that's a big chunk.
Which is quite phenomenal, and if you were to look at the profit on a profit basis, it would be even more than that.
Now, one of the things that the marketers of all these different brands of vodka will say is, ours tastes better, or ours is special this way or that way. They're all trying to differentiate their brand.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. If we go back, you know, I worked at Procter & Gamble on Folgers Coffee a while back, and I know that if you had taken the product that they now sell as Starbucks and given it to consumers unidentified, not told them what it was,
mm-hmm.
it would not have done very well in any test we had run. It would have been too strong and just too different. But I think you put that in a retail environment and you educate people about, you know, what good coffee is, and you also get them to associate that with relaxation and a lot of good cream in the coffee and sugar, and it turns into a different experience, and that's what people will pay for.
Mm-hmm. And people will pay for it if they think it's worth it.
Well, I think, you know, that's one way to put it. I also think they'll pay for it if they have an experience with it that they enjoy. And part of that experience is just actually being in the right sort of retail environment or physical environment, being with their friends and discussing it and a set of things like that. So in some ways, the social event surrounding the consumption of the product is more or equally important as the actual physical characteristics of the product.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some listeners involved in this conversation. Brian is on the line with us from York, South Carolina.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
You asked what kind of vodka people drink, and
yep.
I drink Grey Goose and none other.
And how come?
Well, although Absolut and Smirnoff and Stoli gets all the advertising, I've tried all three, but at bars I'm a martini drinker, and I've tried Grey Goose once, and that's really all it took. I find it to be the best there is, and I've never had anything else.
How did you find out about it?
It was the top shelf vodka at the bar I was at the first time I had it. It was sitting up on a top shelf. I'd never had it. I asked the barkeep. And he highly recommended it. He made the same comment that Absolut and Stoli get a lot of advertising, but hands down, Grey Goose was a far superior product, and I agree.
But this is also an interesting story. Grey Goose also spent a fair amount of time educating barkeeps about what a better vodka is, et cetera, so that when you go to an expert to figure out what is the best vodka I can get, you know, it's not a coincidence that he mentioned that.
Hmm.
If you look at the growth of premium vodkas as a whole, they all had some significant effort behind programs to educate bartenders on sort of the unique qualities of that product so they can be better advisors to the consumers about which products to choose.
In fact, Ketel One, according to your article, sent kits out to bartenders explaining their story, advertisers in this past year so-called their narrative.
Exactly. And Grey Goose, I believe, actually had a video as well that talked about how the stuff was made in France out of French grapes, et cetera.
Hmm.
Now, a similar model for both products.
Now, how do Chopin and Belvedere, which I've also tried, do they do similar things with educating barkeep?
Yeah, they do. I think if you were to look at it, though, and look at the ones that are doing the best, they probably have the best programs.
Hmm.
Today, you know, I would say that's probably Grey Goose and Kettle One.
And Grey Goose, of course, now doing a fair amount of television advertising.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting dynamic with these brands. You know, they start off, I think, by word of mouth and association. Somewhere along the line, they reach a point where I think some advertising is warranted. I think the trick for large companies that are used to advertising a lot fast is not to do that too soon, because part of the appeal of the product is talking to your friends about it and learning to understand it. And if you advertise it before there's anybody to talk to, in some ways that's sort of self-defeating.
Hmm. Yes, you talk about, and Brian, I guess you're an example of this, the importance of building emotional loyalty even among non-drinkers.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the issue is that the occasion, the consumption of vodka or coffee or beer, you know, is a social event, and you do it with your friends. And so part of the appeal of the product is the experience that you have when you're doing it that way.
Hmm. Brian, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks for having me.
And have a happy martini season.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Drew. Drew's calling from Columbus, Georgia.
Listening to WJSP.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
All right. Well, my comment is normally I buy the top shelf vodkas. I'm a Grey Goose Glacier Kettle One drinker, but I've also discovered recently that if you were to pour pretty much any vodka through a Brita filter, a charcoal filter, it takes out the same impurities that one would find in those pretty much unfiltered vodkas that are filtered out for the top shelf vodkas, and they taste just as smooth.
So Fred's vodka, you put it through that Brita water filter, and suddenly it tastes better?
Yeah, you pour it through 3, 4, 5 times, and suddenly you've got a top-shelf vodka, and nobody has to know.
I have to ask you, Drew, it's a little like asking about the first guy who ate an oyster. How did you discover this?
Actually, on the website that I go to called FARC.com, they have a bunch of links to just things that 18 to 34-year-old males would enjoy reading about, and that was one of them.
Okay, Drew, thanks for the advice. We appreciate it.
All right.
Bye-bye. It doesn't really interesting idea, but it doesn't affect this marketing story. One of the interesting things about the article I found, though, Leslie, was the idea of that each of these companies tried to find a price that was unique as well as a distinguishing characteristic that was unique.
Yeah, I think that each of these successful launches entered price points that were unoccupied. So when Absolut came out, Smirnoff was, if you say around today's dollars, was it like $10? Absolut came out at $18. Sky came in between that at like $15. Kettle One at $20, and then Grey Goose at $28. Now, the thing is interesting, if you had talked, I'm sure, I wouldn't know exactly, but if you had talked to the Smirnoff guys and told them that you could sell a bottle of vodka for $28, when they were sitting at the top of the market at 10, they wouldn't have believed that. But I think the price communicates part of the positioning of the brand and its specialness, and finding an open price point to get your product started in is an important point.
And is there anything different in the product itself to justify that much of a price difference?
Well, I mean, I think that all products have to have something distinctive about them. You know, as I discussed before, whether or not that's intrinsically better, you know, is an interesting question. But they have to have either a different flavor profile or fewer impurities or heritage around where they're grown that makes them appear and look different to you as you consume them. I mean, you have to know when you're consuming the product that it's different.
Hmm.
Then I think in many cases, those things are associated with benefits. So I think one of the other things in the article we had was about gasoline. If you look at premium gasoline at a time when it was clear, that was because it was refined more. So there was an actual link to product performance that's associated with that. Now, over time, as you begin to associate that with a social experience and you know, having a good time with your friends, I think the actual functionality of the benefit is probably less important than the total experience together.
We're talking with Leslie Moeller at Booz Allen Hamilton about the vodka model of premium marketing. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Jared is calling from Cleveland.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Jared.
Yeah, I'm calling. I was a bartender in a jazz club in Cleveland here, a martini bar. So I had the experience of pretty much at the end of the night turning around and sampling most of the high-end vodkas that were on the market at the time. And by far, I'd have to say the potato-style vodka is, in my opinion, a better-tasting style of vodka.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, in my opinion, depends on, you know, how you drink your vodka. You know, I prefer a neat martini, whereas somebody who would like a dirty martini might pull a different profile out of a different vodka and enjoy it a different way. But I really think that the experience is also another thing, whereas, you know, being in the live, you know, jazz club where people didn't mind paying more to get the experience for the better drinks as well.
From a bartender's point of view, you can help us out with one thing, Jared. If you're just ordering one drink at the bar, what's the difference between getting a Smirnoff and getting a, well, you talked about that potato-style vodka. That would be Chopin, as far as I understand it.
And I believe Belvedere as well.
But what's the difference, you know, if I just order, you know, vodka on the rocks, or if I order a Belvedere on the rocks? What's the price difference?
Usually a couple dollars, to be quite honest. It depends on the place, but you could probably get a well liquor. We call those well liquors. You just get those right off the well by your knees, but behind the bar, and maybe $4.25 for one of those on the rocks. Whereas premium will cost about $6.25, $6.75.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email we got from Donnie Holmes, who says he's been a bartender for 20 years and that it still amazes me when somebody orders a Grey Goose and pineapple. First of all, the idea of vodka is that it's tasteless, and he says the name brands are all very similar in actual quality. And then you combine it with some heavy mixer. I could put literally any vodka in that glass, and the master distiller himself would have no clue that he had been fooled.
That's very correct.
All right, Jared, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks very much.
And have a good season.
Happy holidays.
Thanks. Bye-bye. As you look at the way these super premium brands are being marketed, Leslie Mueller, again, you used vodka as your example here, do you see that the same kind of situation is going to appear in many lines where these super premium brands are going to be getting more and more of the market?
Yeah, well, I think one thing is if you look at the holiday season, premium products are selling well. I think the other thing is you can't underestimate the ability of a super premium product to revitalize a category. You know, before Starbucks came along, coffee was a declining and sort of ho-hum category. It's now growing, and I think they've sort of helped every brand in the business. That's been the same is true in vodka as well. So I think, you know, manufacturers and entrepreneurs have a chance to sort of change the character of their category and change the character of the kinds of consumers they attract if they can find products like this to market.
One thing interesting you said in the article is that the companies that are really good at this are ones that don't have an awful lot of money.
Yeah, I think the issue with launching super premium products is it flies in the face of, you know, the launching of your typical, let's say, large soft drink like Pepsi One, et cetera, where you spend a couple hundred million dollars, you get it in broad distribution at once, and you try to get a lot of people to try it in the first 3 months. This is much more sort of make a little, sell a little, make a lot of money, and make a little bit more. You know, a build-on experience, let other people learn about it and tell their friends about it.
So let it grow slowly, let the buzz develop, because the buzz, that's your best marketing tool.
Exactly right, and it's not something that large corporations are comfortable doing.
In fact, you say undercapitalized companies are doing it better.
Right, because they don't have the luxury of spending all that money on advertising to start with, or distribution.
So that they respond more naturally to the market, and they can't ramp up a production all of a sudden to meet demand.
Right, and so I think when these companies, let's say like Bacardi, buy Grey Goose, one of the biggest risks they face is being able to run that brand in a way that's consistent with its heritage and what it is.
And I can't leave without asking you what brand of vodka, after all of this research, you drink.
Believe it or not, given my age, I'm an absolute drinker, since that's what I started drinking a while back.
And you maintain brand loyalty?
Oh, yeah, I'm a loyal brand guy from the beginning.
Well, that's nice to hear, Leslie Mueller. We appreciate it. Have one on us this holiday season.
Don't worry. Thanks a lot.
And get back to the snow shoveling. Leslie Mueller is the leader of North American Consumer Products Practice at Booz Allen Hamilton. He spoke to us from his home in Cleveland, Ohio, about an article in the new issue of Strategy and Business magazine. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.